I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
In the month of May, Streaming Things is brought to you by Chester Copperpot, Stanton Valentino, Will Nash, Alan Tomlinson, Wendy O'Loughlin, Jason Hawkins, Matthew Amerson, Trey Barrera, Conrad, Luke and Sarah, David Malfara, Kaylee Sampson, Rabbit Dog in a Barbie Car, Jose Ruben Cruz Rodriguez, Alexis Adler, Thomas Alexander, Emmy, Joe Velez, Abby Vollmer, Valerie, Aaron Layton, Amanda King, Sun Loving Mortal, Andrew Gray, Jen Robinson, Kate, Chloe Richardson, Kalisha Reeves, Kiki Newton, Kevin Sterther, Jeanette Murphy, Casey McCain, and Enza.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
And I'm like Steve, man.
And this is Streaming Things. This time, we're covering a little movie from 1998 called The Big Lebowski. And it was demanded.
Emphasis on big.
The Big. Yeah, because there's another Lebowski. That's why.
Yeah.
Hence the emphasis on that syllable.
Mm-hmm.
This was mandated by one of our patrons. That's a thing they can do. Valerie, thank you so much for forcing me to rewatch The Big Lebowski.
Yeah, thank you, Valerie. Great choice.
Excellent choice. So what we do here, we'll talk a little bit about our overall thoughts, maybe a little bit of the history of the film, both with us personally and globally. And then we'll go into a kind of a scene by scene, play by play recap as best we can. I'm tired. I drank a Coke Zero, so I think I'm good to go. But also, this movie's a little wonky.
It is very wonky.
It's a little tough to do that with, but we'll do our best, our darndest, mm-hmm. if you will. So yeah, Big Lebowski action. Steve, what is your history with The Big Lebowski? Have you seen this movie before? What are your thoughts on it?
Yes, I have seen this movie before. So growing up, this movie came out in what, 1998?
Yeah.
Yeah, 98. So growing up, I remember being a teenager in high school, and this was a very popular movie, right? You know, the circles of friends that I've traveled with, they would quote it all the time. They would laugh about it. But for whatever reason, I was really hesitant to watch it for the longest time. I don't know why. I think it was just because I had a very different idea of in my head what the movie was compared to what it actually is. Because they're like, oh, it's like a stoner comedy. And I'm like, well, I don't need to rush to see that.
It's just like Grind.
Yeah, it's just like Grind. Let's, let's all just be honest with ourselves and just really know that it's just like Grind. I'm an all around the world.
If you didn't listen to that episode, you're really confused.
But so eventually, I think I was like 20 or 21. I definitely had become a 20-year-old. When it was the first time I saw The Big Lebowski, and I loved it. Like, this is such a well written movie. It's like one of the best written movies, I think, dialogue wise and character wise. And it's immediately quotable. It's got some legendary performances, specifically by Jeff Bridges as the titular dude. Well, maybe not titular dude, but he is a Lebowski. He's not the Big Lebowski, but he mm-hmm. is a Lebowski.
Yeah,
but he is the dude. John Goodman as Walter is so funny. And then you've got like just a venerable who's who of stars that kind of sneak in from time to time. I mean, it's the Coen brothers doing what they do best, really. And that's making a comedy that doesn't necessarily have a an overall narrative, right? They're just more about what would this person do in these circumstances than trying to really like encapsulate a plot by plot story, which I think is like very brave. But you know, that's like their calling card, you know, they're experts at it. And this movie is just really, really funny. And I love the small
idiosyncratic.
Thank you. Can't talk.
I got your back.
But
I know you scratch mine.
Nux. Boom. It's got those. Yeah. And I love them. Like just the small fact that like the dude's on a bowling team, but we never see him bowl once is like really funny. Like small stuff like that is just so clever and new and interesting and makes it stand out from the pack. And that's why I love The Big Lebowski as much as I do.
I agree with you. I think my relationship is similar to the Coen brothers in general, as far as what you said about this movie. Like for me, more than any other set of filmmakers, but more than any other filmmaker, I feel like you have to watch, this is from me, my experience, you have to watch the Coen brothers movies several, not just twice, several times before they really sink in, right? And maybe I'm just dumb, but like—
Oh, I agree with that completely.
They're hilarious, but almost, I think I can say 100% of the time, I'm almost positive about that. When I watch one of their movies, especially when I was a kid and teenager and stuff, I didn't even laugh the first time. I'm like, I don't get it. You know, like, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, Raising Arizona, any one of them you could think of, even like way back to the Hudsucker Proxy. I'm like, I don't get it. Right. And then like, it's on TV all the time. The third or fourth watch, I cannot stop laughing. This is the funniest fucking thing I've ever seen. I don't know what it is about their movies that does that, mm-hmm. Where it's like, if it's just a higher level or, you know, it's once you're in a, they're so complex that once you're more comfortable, you start to get more of the jokes. They're very subtle. Mm-hmm. And almost all of their movies are always even critically underappreciated at the time. Like the Big Lebowski got a lukewarm reception. I read one review from 1998 that was like, can't believe these are the guys that won Best Picture for Best Screenplay for Fargo last year. So many cuss words that are used to fill the gaps in the shitty dialogue. That same guy re-reviewed it in 2011 and said, this is my favorite Coen Brothers movie. And so I think everybody kind of experiences that to some degree or another with Coen mm-hmm. Brothers movies.
Yeah, all their movies are one of those movies where the more every time you watch one of their movies, you always pick up on something new that you never saw before. It, like every time I watch The Big Lebowski, I always find something in the background that I never realized and I laugh, or I'm like, oh, that is something that's happening in the background and I never realized it. That's genius. And all of their movies are like that.
And the performances that they get from the actors, they're always well-known, well-trodden stars that give like a totally different kind of vibe than you've ever seen them before. Would that it was so simple. You know, it's just what they did with Ralph Fiennes is amazing. I think about John Goodman way back in Raising Arizona. One of the funniest things I've ever seen is that scene where Nicolas Cage is talking about how I just want to get a job and, you know, raise a family. And he's just like, why would you want to do a thing like that? You know, it's just, it's so fucking funny. But like I said, the first time I watch it, I'm like, and The Big Lebowski was like that for me. This movie, more than any of their other movies, I think works on so many different levels. It is a stoner comedy. It works just fine like that. And that's just like your opinion, man. It's so fucking funny mm-hmm. in that way, whatever. Because it's a parody, but it's also arguably a neo-noir, right? They based this movie on a story by Raymond Chandler called The Big Sleep. And that's why they called it The Big Lebowski. And so it's got all those like plot twists where they're trying to pin a crime on another man. There's private detectives, all this stuff, right? Like it's all beat for beat a neo-noir story, but it's also an American Western. Mm-hmm. Hence Sam Elliott and the tumbleweed at the beginning. And it all works as an eviscerating critique of America post Ronald Reagan. And that's fucking crazy to say out loud. And like, it's easy to listen to me say all that and be like, I think you're looking a little too deeply into it. Right. But I think it's all there. I can back it up.
Would you say,
yeah, well, you know, that's just like, your opinion, man.
Yes, absolutely. And it's totally fine if you just want to look at this movie as like a funny comedy too, because it works amazingly just as that. But rewatching, this is probably the fourth or fifth time that I've seen it, like earnestly by myself, quietly watching it. And I was blown away this time. I mean, I've always loved this movie. I've got the Big Lebowski poster on my wall, but there's a lot of things I didn't notice before because I wasn't old enough in the sense that, you know, I wasn't like a really politically educated person. So it didn't hit me like in the beginning of the movie when it talks about, you know, George Bush and the invasion, the original invasion of Iraq and all the stuff that's going on there. And Sam Elliott saying here's a man, perfect for his time and place. Right. It's putting you right in. And then the reference of, the actual rich man Lebowski, when he talks about, you know, he met Nancy Reagan, like they're throwing Reagan in your face on purpose. Mm-hmm. Right. And the whole thing about, Jeff Bridges representing the 60s and 70s hippie culture and the other Lebowski representing the rampant capitalism of the 80s and early 90s. And the whole symbolism of the fact that he's a fraud and has no money, right? And trying to pin everything on the counterculture. I've never caught that before until watching it this time. You know what I mean? I just thought it was funny. He's the dude, man. He's give a fuck. He's the dude. And everybody in this movie is living in the past, right? You've got Walter, who's constantly obsessed with Vietnam and the Jewish faith that he got from his ex-wife. And so he's a fraud in there. And then the other Lebowski's worried about the 80s and reminiscing on the time when everybody pulled themselves up by their bootstraps and you know, did business.
Well, I think it's funny. This is something that I caught on, and maybe this is really obvious because this is maybe the third time I've seen this movie, but like, maybe it's really obvious to other people, but this was the first time I caught that the dude, Jeff Bridges Lebowski, he's also a fraud in that every time he will be in a scene with someone and they'll say something to him. And then the next scene, or maybe a couple scenes later, he'll
adopt their philosophy.
He'll adopt that philosophy or say word for word something they said. And he's kind of passing it off as his own idea as well. And it's
kind of, I think it's more like, there's that, but I think it's also like he goes with the flow so much that he can flow like water through ideologies. Right. And, this actually became a religion.
Yeah.
It's called dudism.
Dudism.
It's basically Taoism with Kahlua, and it's the Church of the Latter-day Dudes is also what it's known as, right? Which is really fascinating, like the cultural impact this movie has slowly grown into. I mean, it's the cult classic doesn't do it justice, I feel like. I mean, people are obsessed with this movie.
I love if you go onto their website, dudism.com, they describe themselves up top, come join the slowest growing religion in the world, Dudism.
By design, right?
An ancient philosophy that preaches non-preachiness, practices as little as possible, and above all, lost my train of thought there. Anyway, if you'd like to find peace on earth and goodwill, man, we'll help you get started right after a little nap.
Well, there's like a lot of facets, a lot of ins and outs to that religion, you know, and it's complex, man.
Things you can do. You can get citizenship to Dude Land.
Where is Dude Land?
A state of mind.
Oh. Nice. Very cool.
What is their blessing? Now I'm like, I'm going down this
rabbit
hole.
Are you
going
to become a dudist?
You can get ordained as a dudist priest.
Oh, please. You have to wear a bathrobe.
There are over 600,000 worldwide.
I like how in the movie too, he hardly ever has a whole joint. It's always a roach. With on roach clips, it's just very like, when did you smoke the other? Like, I think the only time you see him light a fresh one is with the Big Lebowski and like by the fireside when he first gets the job. Mm-hmm. And he tells him that Bunny got kidnapped, and he's like, it's like a bummer, man. It's a bummer.
there's that funny little bit of direction. I was doing some research, and apparently, like, before they would shoot a scene, Jeff Bridges would ask the Coen brothers specifically, like, hey, in this, right before the scene, did the dude roll a J or what? And they would tell him yes or no. And that was some of the only direction they ever gave him was
if he was high or not.
Are you high or not? And if he was, he would rub his eyes and then pretend to be a little stoned. But I just like, you don't have to see it. He'd be like, I gotta know. Is he rolling a J? What's going on?
Yeah, I was, as you know, a huge stoner in the early, all through the aughts. And so I had a lot of friends that were obsessed with this movie. I thought it was funny, but I wasn't like, but they would every Halloween, beard, glasses, bathrobe. You know.
Are they dudist priests?
I don't know. I haven't talked to them in years. Jimmy's one of them. Who the fuck is Jimmy?
is he?
Yeah, he goes as the dude for Halloween all the time.
R.I.P. Jimmy.
But I had such a good, I actually watched Tron Legacy right after this.
Great movie.
Accidentally, like in the sense that.
Tron Legacy.
I didn't like fall on the remote. I just meant like I didn't intentionally pull up another Jeff Bridges movie. It was for something else, for other content that I was making. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, fucking Jeff Bridges. And it's funny to me, I don't remember the original Tron very well, I'll be honest with you. I've only seen it once.
It's kind of a rough watch.
He's kind of
dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause like, I don't remember him running through the grid being like, oh, cool, man. What, but he does that.
What's his name? Flynn.
Yeah. Flynn.
Yeah. Okay. Flynn lives.
But he's like, he says man and shit a lot. I didn't remember that being a thing. And I started laughing because it was right after I'd seen The Big Lebowski. And I was like, what the fuck is going on here?
They should make The Big Lebowski now, like the 2023 version, where it's Jeff Bridges as the dude. But then the Big Lebowski is that awful CGI Clue from Tron Legacy. And he's just acting against himself.
That would be amazing. But now he's so old. Have you seen like in True Grit in 2010, he was.
I'm Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, I'm just angry, drunk Jeff. I love that fucking movie, by the way. Love that movie. So I guess we could dive in now that we've done some philosophizing and overall thoughts. We both love this movie. I gave it 5 stars on Letterboxd. I don't do that often. I do. I'm pretty generous with the stars. They're fake.
The 5 whole-ass stars.
Whole ass. Love this movie. Layered, hilarious, perfect. Julianne Moore. There's even a Tara Reid jump scare in this movie. Dude, I forgot she was in there.
Tara Reid.
I was like, oh my God, like this whole life that I had forgotten existed flooded before my eyes. I think she's definitive of an era, very short, like 3-year era. You can just call it Tara Reid. And it's with, there's like whale tails at low cut jeans and spiked frosted tip hairdos. Tara Reid, you know, bye, 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 all that.
Right. And NSYNC's there too.
I think so.
Okay.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Cause 99 was when American Pie came out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then, like, until 2002 would be Tara Reid era.
Did you have frosted-tipped hair?
No.
Did you wear those, like, what were they called? The seashell necklaces?
Andy did. I forget what they were called. There's a name for them. No.
Yeah, that's not.
I was counterculture because I was unathletic, so I had to, like, stake my claim elsewhere, you know? I had to commit. Otherwise, I would just be, like, a lesser version of the other guys. So I had long hair. I played guitar. I had Chuck Taylors. And I was, like, drawing Sharpie on my fingernails and stuff. And what's funny is I was a fraud, right? Because the whole thing was to be too cool for school. Mm-hmm. But I was super.
You were so damn cool.
But I was super curious to learn. And so I was the only, like, all black, like, you know, eyeliner on. Throwing things at people, flipping people off with a 4.0. Because I would go home and read all night and listen to fucking Nirvana.
Fucking nerd.
I just think it's funny in retrospect. Like, yeah, man, I don't care. I turned my assignment in.
Don't let the man keep you down, man.
Plus, I got to go to bed early tonight. We got a big test tomorrow.
Yeah.
Also, high school's not that hard. It's not like I was a genius or anything. It was just like I could read really well. English has always mm-hmm. been my thing. And that's like, they're like, damn.
You can read? Sharpie boy can read?
Public school in Kentucky had very low standards. So I graduated with flying colors. Anyhoozle, let's hop right in. We start off with Sam Elliott. His narration as the stranger.
Let me tell you about the dude.
A lot of people think he represents the dude's conscience. He seems to be, he's something otherworldly for sure. Mm-hmm. Right. But yeah, he tells us about Jeff Lebowski, the dude. And there's a dude ranch joke in there. I think dude's not something you'd want to be called where I'm from. I'm not sure why. I didn't think dude was a.
So in cowboy culture back in the day, they would call what people they would see as like city slickers, dudes. So they were like, look at this mamby pamby dude.
Look at this dude.
Yeah. Like he doesn't rustle up cattle.
Sure don't.
Sure don't.
Yeah.
His spurs are brand new. They look shiny. They're not dirty.
Sometimes you eat the bar. Sometimes the bar eats you. It's a bear.
Yeah. Yeah. And it threw me off because the subtitles spell it bear, but yeah, they're clearly saying bar.
Well, if I didn't have subtitles, I might not have known he meant bear.
I wouldn't have known that.
I didn't even know that was an accent. I would have been like,
what is this bar people are going to, where they might get eaten by it?
If Sam Elliott was watching Yellow Jackets, he would say,
I never miss an episode.
He would say, bar down.
Bar down.
And then we see Tumbleweed just drifting to let us know that we're in a Western set in L.A., Los Angeles. I never met a nice person in Los Angeles. And then we see the dude himself. He's in a grocery store. He's looking for some milk because he's got to make his white Russians.
Mm-hmm. Or half and half.
Another a joke for Westerns, right? Because they're always got a cup of whiskey in Westerns, but he's always got Kahlua and milk, you know? Is it half and half that they use?
Yeah, he's sniffing half and half specifically in the story. Yeah.
Okay, and he's in a robe, flip-flops.
He's a man for his time and place. He fits right there. But apparently, so his wardrobe, the flip-flops and the robe, and the t-shirt, that's Jeff Bridges' personal clothing.
Like he showed up to set in that and they were like, perfect.
Well, like he and the costume designer would actually like go through his closet and be like, yeah, the dude would wear this. And apparently that shirt that he wears most of the movie, he wore in like two other previous movies. I can't remember which ones they were, but you can see Jeff Bridges wearing that same shirt and it's a shirt he stole from his brother.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is like, I just love the idea. Like
these back.
Jeff, because originally I had read that they originally were going to cast Mel Gibson as the dude.
Oh, that would have been
which
awful.
Which is, yikes.
He would have hated Walter.
they get halfway through the movie when Walter says like the Shabbos and Mel Gibson be like, I'm sorry, what?
I'm off the team.
Pardon me.
So bad.
You don't fuck with the Jesus.
Did you see Mel Gibson is directing another movie? And I like Mel Gibson's movies. I really do. I'll be the one to say that out loud.
No, yeah.
However, it's tough nowadays for obvious reasons. But he just said he's going to direct a new movie and he cast Mark Wahlberg.
Hey guy, what do you mean you ain't gonna see them the Mel Gibson movie, huh? Take an interest in science.
Stay prayed up. Did you see that video?
No.
He's got like this giant cross built in his house with like this thing to set his knees on so he doesn't have to go all the way down. And it's just a quick video he posted of himself kneeling, praying, standing up, and going, stay prayed up. He's got an app, a prayer app, the Mark Wahlberg prayer app.
Is Mark Wahlberg super religious?
I think so now, yeah. And he wakes up at 2:30 every day and only sleeps 3 hours and all that shit. He's an interesting guy.
Okay.
He also did a lot of hate crimes in his
also,
teens.
Also, go to Wahlburgers. Get yourself a delicious burger.
Yeah, my third brother.
My third brother does that. He had to close shop in Cincinnati. It sucks.
Did he?
Yeah, the Wahlburgers
went
closed,
down. All COVID?
No, it just closed like a
couple just terrible burgers.
Ago. It's terrible burgers.
Man, it's kind of hard to make a bad burger. But yeah, sometimes there's a man, right? And then he writes her a check at this grocery store for 69 cents for the half and half, which I found hilarious. You don't write a check for change, but you do if you're the dude.
On September 11th, 1991.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
God, I need to pay attention. That's fascinating.
But it's also, so someone was trying to explain this to me, but I didn't quite understand what they were going for. But like, so he's watching the like that news conference of George H.W. Bush talking about like
Kuwait and Iraq. And this aggression will not stand.
This aggression will not stand. But apparently that conference was aired and was recorded and aired in like 1990 or something. So the fact that he's like post-dating his check like over a year in advance.
Oh, really?
Yeah. To get this half and half.
I didn't catch that, obviously, at all.
That's how poor he is.
I was three when all that stuff was going on.
Yeah.
I would watch SNL at like 7 years old, and there'll be all these Dan Quayle jokes and stuff, and I would laugh like I knew who that was.
Potato.
I didn't. Potato. But he goes back to his apartment and then immediately gets attacked. Where's the money, Lebowski? Which is a through line throughout this movie.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
And then Bunny says, you're good for it, right? And then he's just in the toilet getting...
dunked
waterboarded essentially in the toilet.
Yeah.
And then he says, put me back in there. Let me take another look.
That's such a good line.
It's a great line. But so essentially his wife owes Jackie Treehorn is the guy, but it's not his wife. He doesn't have one. It's the wrong Lebowski. So they piss on his rug before they find this out. And he's very upset about that. Hey man, it ties the whole room together. Don't do that. Right.
And right off the bat, he's just firing off great.
The toilet seats up, man.
Do I look like I have a fucking wife, man? The toilet seats up. And that toilet seat is ghastly.
It's not clean.
It's gross. And then, like, at one point he tells the guy, like,
Are you about to say the best line in the movie?
Obviously, you're not a
yes!
golfer.
Yeah. What's this? And hands him a bowling ball. And he goes, obviously, you're not a golfer. That's the kind of joke that, like, maybe I'm an idiot. First time through, nothing from me. Fourth time, that's the funniest thing in the movie. You know what I mean? And that's just how the Coen brothers are to me. And he says, at least I'm housebroken.
Yeah, at least I'm housebroken. He's just like firing them off immediately.
It's so fucking good.
Exasperated dude is my favorite dude.
Yes.
Because he's such like a chill, like fun, lovable.
He gets pushed
dude.
To his limits.
But when he gets pushed to that point, that's when I think the best gold is mine.
Like covered in the ashes of Donnie, just doesn't know what to say, just staring like fucking A, man.
I think the line that makes me laugh the hardest is, there's a beverage here, man. Like that. I don't know.
Oh, when you're throwing him in the other limo. See, I didn't even laugh when he said that earlier, but when you said it and I remembered it,
it's hilarious. Just like the way he's like protecting the drink over his own body. There's a beverage here.
whoa. Spill my he probably drinks like 6 to 8 White Russians.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
that carton of half and half he bought, that lasted him that day.
Well, everywhere he goes to has a bar, a little mini bar, and man, help yourself. And he does. Mm-hmm. He does indeed.
That's the dude.
So after they leave, it's at the bowling alley. That's when we get our credits and stuff. And Walter is being told about the incident. Walter is the foil to the dude. The dude abides, right? He's not unbothered by anything. He goes with the flow. Walter has PTSD from Vietnam and has a chip on his shoulder. And stands up. He's the opposite. He thinks everything is a grave offense and must be handled, right? And then we also meet.
There are rules.
Yeah. Am I the only one around here? Remember when that was the meme of the century for like 13 months?
Yeah. Am I the only one around here who insert whatever?
Yeah. And fucking Donnie, Steve Buscemi, doing great work. I've never quite figured out the character of Donnie and what his point is, other than just to make me laugh because Walter's so mean to him. But yeah, that's what he says. It's unchecked aggression.
Well, they need a third member of the team.
They peed on your rug.
Someone has to bowl Chris to really show that they're actually a bowling team.
Strikes every time except.
Does Walter ever bowl?
I think we see Walter bowl once.
Okay.
You're out of your element, Donnie.
You're out of your element, Donnie.
One of the best lines in the movie. And then I like that he corrects Jeff and Asian American, please.
They say that slur like a lot very quickly. And I remember thinking like, I don't remember this part of the movie at all. And then I laughed hysterically when Walter, of all people, who's so mad about the rules, like, by the way, dude, that's not the preferred nomenclature.
Yeah, not cool, man. And then he says, you know, blame the other Lebowski, right? Like, that's who owes you a new rug. And he kind of convinces our Lebowski that's the case. He talks him into being mad at him, right? So then cut to him at
he's got to compensate him for his rug.
Yes, he does. Yeah. So he's at the big Lebowski's house. Fucking Philip Seymour Hoffman.
What a treasure.
Another face I forgot. My favorite actor of all time. Love that man to death.
That's a good pick. It gone too soon.
Oh, it breaks my heart. Like, literally, I started bawling watching Hunger Games Catching Fire because he's in it. Mm-hmm. And at a really inappropriate time.
Oh, good. That would have been weird if he wasn't.
Yeah. Because I'm in recovery, so his death like hits me extra hard. Yeah, I mean, the man was sober over 20 years. Reminder to me not to slack off, and for whatever reason, thought he could have a glass of wine and being a millionaire and a heroin addict just doesn't work out very well.
Yeah, that was when he died. That was the one that's like, oh, I feel like the culture really lost something.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I mean, he just transforms. He's the best part of whatever movies he's in. I actually love Mission Impossible 3, which I think is a hot take because especially
love
now
Mission
that everybody
Impossible
hates J.J. Abrams. Really, do you?
Yeah.
I think it's great. I can't wait to. We got to rewatch all those.
I will say Mission Impossible 3 is amazing 75% because of Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got one, the best villain in the franchise until we get to, you know,
Ethan Hunt. That guy?
Yeah.
Ethan Hunt.
I love those movies. Are we going to do an MI watch off?
Please. We should do that in anticipation of Reckoning?
Dead Reckoning,
Dead
Part
Reckoning,
1.
Part 1.
That's one of my most anticipated of the summer. Can we do this? When do we got to do this soon.
We got to figure out when Dead Reckoning Part
Listeners,
1 goes out.
Let us know if you're interested in a Mission Impossible off. And if not.
Your mission, if you choose to accept it,
write
into streamingthingspod@gmo.com and let us know if you would be into a deep dive of the Mission Impossible franchise.
And hurry up. This will self-destruct.
Oh, God. I hope you're not driving.
Most of them are.
Oh, no.
But there's this hilarious scene with Philip Seymour Hoffman, who's basically like the assistant slash butler guy.
Brant.
Obsessed. Yeah, Brant, who's obsessed with the Big Lebowski. But he's walking through all of his accolades, the pictures with Nancy Reagan. And he just keeps asking these inappropriate questions. Like when he goes, oh, these are his children, all of his like part of his foundation. And he's like, oh, different mothers. So racially, he's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And Brant's just like, what? No. And then he's like, so he's a Crip. Yes, he's disabled, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's just funny to see him kind of the dude work around what's going on here. And the whole scene where he keeps touching the trophy.
Don't touch that. And please then don't touch
he
that.
He touches it one last time as he walks away. Did you see that?
Yeah, just that last little,
little, you know, he's standing up to the man.
He just paintbrushes it with his finger, too. It's
like just, and then we see the dude in a totally intentional mirror to put his face on Time Magazine's Man of the Year, right? Yeah. To tell you again, this is the man of his time, right? Mm-hmm. This is the perfect encapsulation of the early 90s. This is Gen X at its height of its power.
That's the dude.
Railing against the cokehead 80s guys. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, the Big Lebowski does not handle it well. He already knows the whole story. He's not paying for his rug. Every time a rug is micturated upon in this country, I have to compensate the person. And he says, first off, he walks him through different versions of his name, right? El Deuterino, if you're Deuterino. Not into the whole brevity thing.
So his dudeness or Deuter.
And then he gets Big Lebowski gets angry at the mention of his wife. And says that the racial slur again, but in Korea, which makes no sense. And then
that's why it's a slur. They usually don't make sense.
Indeed. Mm. Indeed. They're not the brightest bunch that use those. So dude leaves and but tells lies to Brant and says, yeah, he said I could take any rug I wanted.
So good. And Brant's like, right away.
Yeah, I don't have to check at all. And then outside he sees his wife, played by Tara Reid. And painting her nails. And she says, I'll suck your cock for $1,000.
Brant can't watch, though.
He is so uncomfortable. And she's such a firecracker.
We love her around here. That's for sure.
But then she says, yeah, Brant can't watch unless he pays. And he's like, ha, ha, ha. We also meet Uli, the
Uli's
nihilist.
In the pool, like passed out.
Mm-hmm. Because he's a nihilist. He doesn't believe in anything. So then we go back
fucking
to the bowling
nihilists.
Alley. Walter's late. And his line, if you will it, it is no dream. And then they have an extended conversation. And at some point, quickly, the dude says, I don't understand. And he says, Theodore Herzl. Or he says, what's that? Because he's talking about the dog. That's right. Theodore Herzl. No, not the fucking quote, man. The dog.
I think it's a Pomeranian.
It is.
But it's like not a Pomeranian.
I don't even know. Is that another joke? Because I don't know my dogs I didn't get.
I'm like 90% sure that's not a Pomeranian.
Because they're poofier, right?
Yeah, I think it's more like some type of terrier, but I could be mistaken.
That'd be funny.
But like, it would be so funny if you're like, this guy who's just, the dog has papers, dude. But he doesn't even know it's Pomeranian.
It's not a real. Yeah, I think you're onto something there. And it's Cynthia's dog, his ex-wife. He's living in the past. And yeah, he says it's a show dog with papers. That's why he can't leave it out there. And then Smokey is over the line in Walter's estimation while he's bowling.
Over the line. I'm sorry, Smokey. You're over the line. Just love that shift in tone in his voice.
He's a constant screamer. This is not Nom. This is bowling. And one of his constant refrains, am I wrong? Am I wrong? And then he pulls a gun on Smokey, right? Am I the only one around here that gives a shit about the rules?
Market zero.
Which Smokey does, indeed. Market zero.
But I love when he pulls a gun away. He's like, it's a league game, Smokey. Like, come on. You get it.
This is understandable, right. What I'm doing right
what
now.
What I'm doing is what normal people do.
And Smokey's a pacifist. And there's a lot of competing philosophies in this movie. We got Judaism. We got nihilism. We got pacifism. We have Taoism.
Dudism.
Yeah. I think I'm missing some. Just capitalism in general. There's a lot going on in this fucking
movie. A
lot
of isms.
But while they're talking in the car about how rude he was to Smokey, you see the cops storm into the bowling alley, presumably looking for Walter.
I'm calmer than you were. I'm calmer than you are.
Yeah. And he's got his new rug back at his house. He hears a voicemail from Smokey about submitting it to the league. And then we get a voicemail from the bowling league guy saying that they're going to be in trouble for pulling the gun. And a voicemail from Brandt.
Article 27. I love how there's an actual article
pulling
in the bowling league about pulling
a gun. During league play. Normally it's acceptable.
Yeah. During league play, though, that's a violation of Article 7.
Are you bowling? You like bowling?
Recreationally, I'm not like,
sure.
I'm not good at it.
But like you don't have shoes.
No, I don't have shoes.
I kind of want to buy shoes.
Yeah?
I like bowling.
Is it because you like the idea of the fashion and the...
I don't want to put my feet in other people's feet.
I was going to say, or is it because you don't want to put your feet in the in the rental shoes?
I've only been bowling like 7 times in my life, but I always really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I like to go. And then I started seeing the scene where they're spraying them in this movie. And I was like...
Gross.
Yeah, I forgot about that aspect. made it this far in my life without athlete's foot. I'd like that to continue.
Do you like duck pin bowling?
What is this?
It's the really tiny bowling.
I don't think I would. I want the biggest like, pins and balls I can find.
There's a bar downtown called Pins, and it has a bunch of duck pin bowling. But like all the pins are on like string, so when you knock them down, the string like lifts them back up. But it's smart enough to know which
like
ones
little
you missed.
Pinocchio.
Yeah,
pins,
and the balls are only like this big. So you just kind of, they're like ski balls. You kind of like chuck them.
I do love ski ball. Now that's a fucking sport.
That is a fucking sport. You're goddamn right.
I'm really good at ski ball. I get hella tickets. I told you I wasn't an athlete. I lied.
You bring them the bucket of tickets. You're like, here, I'll take the number 2 pencil, please.
All those sticky hand things on a string.
Ew, this is going to be fuzzy in 20 minutes.
Yeah, I'm getting like 10 of them, bitches. I got so many tickets. Doesn't matter. Next.
I'll use the rest of my tickets to get all the Tootsie Rolls you got.
Yeah. Have you ever been foaling?
Frisbee golf?
No, it's football bowling.
Oh no, I recently just learned
there's one
about
up north.
This.
It's really fun.
Yeah, there's one that opened up not too far from us. Actually,
it's really fun, especially since you drank. Like I was all sober. Well, you know, I mean, everybody's got their beers and shit. Everything's funner when you're drunk.
That's true.
Like what's really cool about it, and this isn't a podcast for foaling, but I think you should go because it's so you set your pins up. You have your opposing team, so you go with like your friends and stuff, right? You try to throw the football and knock the pins over. However, the catch is there's no separation between the lanes. It's just like a regular bowling alley. And as you can imagine, throwing a football and trying to get it to hit pins, the footballs bounce like crazy.
Yeah.
And they tell you, like, if another team 3 lanes down bounces their ball into your pins and knocks them down, that counts.
I love it.
And so it's chaos. And what happens is like a ball will start to bounce into your shit and you like dive no and swat it. And then it hits someone else's pins and they're like, fuck no. And like it's this whole funny thing where you kind of become brethren with the other guys next to you. And they're
that is fun. I like that.
Guarding each other's pins and shit. It was a great time.
Let's have a streaming things outing.
A foaling journey.
Yeah.
We just wear like a GoPro.
Foaling things. Yeah. I got like 3 GoPros we can strap to
do
ourselves.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, let's do that.
Let's do that. That sounds awesome.
We could tell everybody we're filming.
Yeah.
Get releases signed.
Yeah.
Whatever you got to do. Or just blur them out.
Whatever.
Whatever. We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
We got to be careful when you go in the bathroom.
Turn those off, please. I knew a guy that filmed a wedding and they had like I forget why, but there was like a GoPro on head shtick that they wanted to record during the reception, the party. And one of the groomsmen that was wearing that forgot to turn it off. And he was telling me like, yeah, I was editing video, but I saw this guy's dick because he forgot to turn the camera off when he went to the urinal.
Just looking down at
yeah,
it.
Yeah, just like, well, look at that.
Like you do.
Yeah.
Editors, man, hats off to you. You guys deal with shit nobody knows about.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he gets all these voicemails and ultimately he has to go back to the Big Lebowski's house. There's a voicemail from Brandt beckoning him. And I assure you, we don't care about the rug.
The rug is not a problem. I have terrible news. Let's go to the West Wing.
Yeah. And then while he's out there, he goes to leave. Marty shows up at his front door.
Marty, the landlord?
And he's got a white Russian. He just wants advice on bowling and stuff. And it turns out it's the dude's landlord. He's way late on rent. But he's so nice, right? He's such a pushover when it comes to the dude. And he's like, oh, yeah, man, I'll get it to you. My dude is going to sound like Argyle a lot. And
hey,
I can't
man.
Help it. It's just like your opinion, man. Yeah.
I read that in the original script, the way the dude got money was he was like a trust fund baby, from his father was the dude who invented the Rubik's Cube, so that was how like he was originally supposed to have money, But then the Coen brothers ultimately decided like it was a much more enjoyable movie if you left the dude a little bit of a, as much of a mystery as you could.
Yeah, like why doesn't he work? Yeah.
Yeah. How does he even afford the half and half if he has no job?
He's got $4 at one point when they meet the nihilist at the end. And yeah. It's like, where did he get that?
Did Donnie give that to him?
Well, even his backstory that he tells Maud, like none of that made sense to me. I know it's just a bunch of hippie stuff, but hilarious. There's another line I never appreciated before when he says something about like, yeah, you ever hear of the Sweet Seven?
The Seattle Seven?
Yeah, that was me.
And six other guys.
And then there's like a long beat, six other guys. It's so fucking funny. But yeah, so Brandt and Lebowski won his help.
One of the dudes that they took inspiration from was actually a part of the real Seattle Seven.
Oh, really?
Is that
the movie they made with Jeremy Armstrong and Sacha Baron Cohen and shit recently?
That was a Chicago...
Different Seven?
Yeah.
Chicago Seven?
Something, yeah.
Huh. Is it the Magnificent Seven? The Cowboys?
Yeah.
Am I on the right track?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. No, the dude is like based off of like... He's like an amalgam of three people that the Coens knew. Like physically, he's like, there's a guy named, I think Brett Dowd is his name. Jeff Dowd. That's a guy they knew specifically, but he had the look and he talked like that. And he actually told people to call him the dude. And then there was a writer named John Milius who wrote Dirty Harry. I guess that guy is kind of based off Walter, but a lot of the situations that they find themselves in this movie, like finding a kid's homework in a stolen car and driving to the kid's house and threatening them, that's something that dude actually did in real life.
Just looked up the dude.
Yeah.
And or the kid.
But the only difference was the father wasn't in an iron lung. He was just bedridden.
Yeah. Another Western through line was the fact that writer wrote Branded in the movie, you know, which again, another thing I've never laughed at so hard before was when he's all drunk in the back of the cop car and he's singing the theme song from Branded. Cause it's like a reference from way earlier. It's super funny.
I don't think I made that connection. That's so funny.
Yeah.
You notice something every time.
It's something new in a Coen Brothers movie every single time.
Oh, but yeah.
Mr. Lebowski is in seclusion in the West Wing, right? And like the whole flamboyant sadness of Philip Seymour Hoffman's character, though, when he like throws open the double doors and sadness and bowels.
And then they have that very classic orchestral song.
Yeah.
I meant to look it up.
Yeah, you just pictured Batman floating down, wings outstretched. What makes a man?
Strong men cry. Men also cry.
Mind if I do it, Jay? and then he has a ransom note for Bunny is what he hands to the dude. This is a bummer, man. And he wants dude to be the courier of the ransom. He'll pay him $20,000 to do that, right?
They think he can identify them if they were the men who soiled his rug.
You think the carpet pissers did this? And then we get to the greatest scene in perhaps all of cinema. The introduction of John Turturro as Jesus. The Jesus. And again, they take a shot at Christianity in this movie. They made Jesus a pedophile. You know, like it's
pederast.
Walter's always slightly off.
Yeah. 8-year-olds, dude.
And he's got the Coke pinky.
He's got the Coke nail, yeah.
And they pan across all of the dude and gang slowly.
I love his weird hairnet that goes and covers his ponytail.
Yeah, man.
He has those bowling rings, which apparently are like legit real rings that mean, like, if you're a real bowler and you saw those rings, you would like your jaw.
Oh, he's like a champion bowler.
Yeah, like one of his rings means he threw a perfect game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like
did you see the spinoff, the Jesus Rolls?
I didn't because people said it was bad.
I never watched it either.
Yeah,
it was like written and directed by John Turturro.
Yeah, he got permission from the Coen brothers to spin this off, but I heard it wasn't good.
Yeah, but it wasn't without the dude.
I know. And I can't imagine a movie about this dude.
That guy.
For like an hour and a half to 2 hours being good.
Just going door to door when he moves.
I'm going to fuck you, man.
Yeah, Quintana.
The fuck with the Jesus.
Are you ready to be fucked, man? So many people say they're going to fuck you in the ass or get fucked in the ass in this movie. It's bonkers. But that's when he says, are you ready to be fucked, man? And then dude says, that's just like your opinion, man.
That's just your like opinion, man.
I love how they're none of as mad as Walter gets. Even when he's like directly threatened a bunch, he's always calm. and very confident. Like it happens with the nihilist, but it happens every time with the Jesus too. Cause he's like, fuck you, man. I will shove that gun up your fucking ass, man. And he's just standing there like 8-year-old dude. You know, he's just unaffected by this guy.
He doesn't engage with Jesus at all. No. Like almost never.
He's like, meh.
Yeah. I love the Jesus's like little buddy, like his bowling partner that looks like they don't look like two people who would be friends. No. They're like high-fiving off screen and stuff.
But that scene where he's like polishing his ball in the background is so epic.
8-year-olds, dude.
But that whole, and you know, it's a Spanish version of Hotel California, which is funny because later we find out that the dude hates the Eagles. And I guess they did that on purpose probably because this is not a guy he fucks with, right? I just put that literally just now that occurred to me.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I love that song. I don't know why you wouldn't like the Eagles.
Well, because I think people of that era see the Eagles as sellouts. Like they're like the super, like they sing about hippy dippy stuff, but they're like corporate sellouts.
Yeah.
So that's why someone like the dude would probably not like them.
Not like CCR, you know, not that cool.
No, CCR is like amazing.
It's a baller soundtrack, this movie. Mm-hmm. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, and I love this month's theme. It's all about balance. How do you spend time for yourself when you're so busy worrying about other people? I find that extremely difficult. I know I've got kids, I've got dogs, I've got cats even. They're very self-sufficient, but every now and then very demanding, especially when their bowl's empty. And so it's all about getting caught up in what everyone else needs from you and never thinking about what you need from yourself. But when we spend all of our time giving it, it can leave us feeling stretched thin and burned out. So therapy can give you tools to find more balance in your life so you can keep supporting others without leaving yourself behind. Steve, you know a thing or two about this, don't you?
Yeah, I was actually in a relationship with someone. It was a very codependent relationship, and I spent so much of my time not worried about my own health, but their own. And that left a lot of things in my life not as great as they could be, Chris. And so I was able to get involved with BetterHelp. I found a therapist. It was very easy to use. My therapist was really, really awesome. She gave me books to read, gave me homework, and made me realize that I am a person worthy of value and worthy of spending time on myself with. And that's why BetterHelp is really, really awesome.
So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, suited to your schedule. You found it to be the case, Steve?
I did. 100% love BetterHelp.
And so all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire, get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapist at any time for no additional charge. So if you feel like you're not vibing, you can move on.
Next.
And then, you know, you can worry about balance immediately.
You want to make sure you get the therapist that you want and not the therapist that may be a very picky cat.
That's true. Mm-hmm. My cat is a terrible therapist.
Yeah.
So find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/streamingthings today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/streamingthings. But after that scene is when the dude gets punched lying on his new carpet. Boy, we later find out is Maude Lebowski and her crew, but we don't know that yet. And then he's back at the bowling alley. Walter is joining him on the drop is the plan, right, Steve? Walter says, you know, he's going to do the drop with him. And he kind of inserts himself into all of these situations from here on out as much as he can. They're driving in the car, and the dude's convinced that Bunny because she needed money for Jackie Treehorn, kidnapped herself. Mm-hmm. But he's not fully convinced enough to like do anything with the drop. He just wants to do what he's told and get his $20,000. However, Walter's so convinced that he wants a new plan. He's going to, his very complicated plan is that he's going to beat the guy up and make him tell him where she is. Right. Mm-hmm. And then that's the hilarious exchange where the dude's like, oh, well, fuck, man, you thought it all out. And then Walter's like, you got to keep plans need to be simple. Complicated plans is where things go awry. There's many places they can fail. And then all of a sudden they get the phone call that, of course, the drop is going to be on the wooden bridge. Just throw it over, thwarting his very simple plan.
That shot of them throwing the bag mm-hmm. out of the car is actually a reverse shot.
They were throwing it back into the car?
Yeah, like so the car is moving backwards and someone's throwing it into the car because they couldn't get it to look as cool as it does.
Right.
Doing it the normal way because that's hard to throw something out the window. So they were just having someone catch it and nice. They just replayed it backwards in the
Interesting.
Movie.
Interesting. Did you know this is totally irrelevant, but I just learned this is probably a well-known fact, especially you as a sci-fi nerd. When Sigourney Weaver in Alien 3 throws the basketball behind her.
Mm-hmm. That's real.
It's real, but also yeah. the very first take.
Oh, and that's why Ron Perlman loses his shit.
Oh, you know about the whole where Ron almost ruined everything and stuff?
Yeah.
Because he goes, oh my God. And they had to like, they didn't think they could edit it in a way where it was like, dude, what did you just do? Holy shit. That'll never happen again. What have you done? It's a really funny story. But yeah, baller ass move on Sigourney Weaver's part.
Mm-hmm.
First try. I mean, she did it hundreds of times in rehearsal, never made it. But the first time they were rolling, dunk.
Hell yeah.
Unlike in this movie where they couldn't manage it and they had to fake it. a much simpler thing they had to fake. But yeah, he keeps going back and forth. There's a couple of funny jokes with the phone call. I was actually getting frustrated with Walter in this
scene. Amateurs.
Amateurs. And then he says, like, be quiet, man. As soon as he waits for him to answer and goes, amateurs.
Yeah. He's just being so petty.
He's just a petty master.
Purposefully ignorant and such a dick.
So his new plan on the fly, he brought an Uzi. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And he says, hey, I'm going to get this up down to 15 miles an hour. I'm going to roll out. You drive and I'm going to circle back and get him. He rolls out, drops the Uzi. It starts firing off like crazy. He shoots the car, pops a tire. They crash.
They wreck.
And then the kidnappers take off on their motorcycles with the bag. What we think is the dummy money that Walter came up with. We later find out there's no money in either case, but that's the big reveal for later.
But this like makes the dude feel like they're going to be responsible for a woman being murdered.
This poor lady, man.
They're going to kill this poor woman, man. Copying something I think Brandt said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He always repeats what and the whole this aggression will not stand, man, is from listening to the broadcast with George Bush.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's fucking funny.
I love it.
But yeah, so then
parlance of our times, man.
they go back to the bowling alley. And they argue about the poor woman a little bit. Well, when they get outside, he finds that his car has been stolen. He knows it's been stolen, even though it was parked in a handicapped spot.
You missed the Walter can't play on Saturdays because he's a Shomer Shabbos.
Shomer Shabbos.
It's his day of rest. And the whole time the dude's like, we killed that woman. He's not even listening to
no.
me. What's it say, Donnie? Shomer Shabbos.
I can't answer the phone. I can't work. I can't drive. And I definitely can't fucking roll.
Can't fucking roll.
Shomer Shabbos. And the last time he says it, he just says it for no reason, even though he's talking directly to dude now. He's such a frustrating person to be friends with. Shomer Shabbos.
And I do love the ongoing joke that Donnie's always like maybe 45 seconds behind the conversation because Walter's like gone off on this tirade. And then Donnie just pipes in, what's a Shomer Shabbos? Donnie, you're out of your element.
You're out of your element, Donnie. Shut the fuck up, Donnie.
Did you notice that Donnie never wears a bowling shirt? With no. his name on it.
He's never quite, oh, is he there at all?
Well, he always is wearing a bowling shirt, but it always has a different person's name on it. So he
I know one time it said Art.
There's Austin, Ray, and then there are two other ones that were like, I couldn't quite
No,
make
the
out
dude's wearing one that says Art.
Yeah, the dude is. So maybe they're stealing
I think
people's
they're stealing
bowling
the bowling shirts. That's so fucking good. So yeah, after that, they find out the car has been stolen. And he just ends up frustratedly walking home.
Was there anything valuable in the car? Some Creedence tapes.
Yeah, my tape deck, Creedence tapes, my just business papers. What do you do for a living?
I'm unemployed.
The cop's so nice.
Also, my rug was stolen. Separate incidences.
Oh, separate incident. I love the moment when they hear the voicemail. I'm the one who took your rug. And he goes, oh, mystery solved.
Can close the case. Yeah. Close the case on that one.
And he said, but I wouldn't worry. I wouldn't plan on getting your tape decks back. And then the other cop's like, or the Creedence tapes. Yeah. But anyway, Maude Lebowski reveals herself and says that she will send a limo to pick him up. So he takes the limo there. He finds out that the Nihilists are friends of hers as well. She knows Yuri. They were in a band called
Uli.
Yeah, Uli. Also, yeah, Uli. What was their band called?
Oh, no, I wrote it. Oh, I can't
think I
remember.
Have it later when they actually talk about it later. But yeah. That stuff's discussed. And then he goes back to the fucking bowling alley, believe it or not.
My art has been called strongly vaginal. Vagina.
Does it make you uncomfortable when I say that word? Most men it does. But they can talk about their dick, their prick, their Johnson. Johnson?
Johnson. Zex can be a naturally zesty enterprise. I love the way that Julianne, this might be my favorite Julianne Moore character ever.
And she all, yeah. Yeah.
How she just so deadpanly delivers some of this. The way she says, my art has been called strong and vaginal. Vagina.
I read a review that said that she represented Mother Nature, hence the sexuality and the femininity. He went really deep into it, but it was interesting. It was interesting.
They watch Log Jammin' together.
Yeah.
Starring Carl Hungus, who is Uli. But yeah, so.
It's hard to make them go back to the farm once they've met Carl Hungus.
Yeah. Yeah, so Bunny is she implies that Bunny is a nymphomaniac and doesn't actually get pleasure from sex, so she's always trying to find it.
Yeah.
And she's kind of fallen in with these nihilists who have been in pornos together and stuff like that.
Yep. So she wants him to help get the money back because she says that her father took the money from the charity foundation.
Little Lebowski Achievers.
Wasn't his money to give. So that's her stake in this fight. She also thinks that Bunny is behind this in some way, or at least not in danger.
Why does she have sentimental value to the rug? Because she says, like, I'll give you $100,000 to help me find that the $1 million that my father stole, but not the rug. It has sentimental value.
Because she said that was a gift to her late mother.
Okay.
So she gave that rug to her mom before she passed. That's why it's in that house.
Gotcha.
So that wasn't his to give you. She's actually very cool and, you know.
Oh, yeah. She's
understandable about everything. Except for when she punches him. But she was mad about the rug.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Understandable. Again, you get this sweaty dude just laying on your mom's rug. Sweating Kahlua all onto it. But then at this point.
Go see a doctor, Jeffrey. He's a good man. He's very thorough.
Very thorough as well. He says that multiple times. And then he goes back to the bowling alley. He tells Walter he doesn't care about bowling, which is a low blow to Walter. And that's where we meet Sam Elliott as the stranger in the flesh. We've heard him as the narrator, but he's sitting at the bar and he's like, hey, I like your style, all that kind of stuff. Right. And says, sometimes you eat the bar, sometimes the bar eats you.
Oh, man. Yeah. Sorry. I'm trying to catch up. My notes are like so much longer in the scene. I'm like, where are you at?
I might have skipped a few things.
The thing to note that we did skip is there's a blue Volkswagen following him around.
That comes back. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the big thing. Did we talk about the, yeah. So, but before this scene, the nihilists break into his apartment.
Is that before? Oh, that's why I had the nihilist note. Yeah.
Yeah. So they break in and like, give us the money, Lebowski. And they throw in the ferret and he's like, that's
with
a nice marmot.
Red Hot Chili Peppers.
So I forgot that was Flea. And for a second, the way he kind of like has his mouth kind of agape, I was like, is that Paul Scheer? Like, I thought it was Paul Scheer. It was Paul Scheer for the longest time, but no, it's Flea.
Flea pops up in random movies constantly. Mm-hmm. Actually, great performance in this, though, especially when he's ordering pancakes and he's like falling asleep. Mm-hmm. Lingonberry pancakes.
Lingonberry.
But did yes.
You, yeah.
I skipped all that. But when he's talking to the stranger, there's a joke where when he talks about the bear, he says, is that some kind of Eastern thing? And he goes, far from it, because it's a Western thing. Mm-hmm. Get it?
Thank you.
But then at the end, he says, do you have to use so many cuss words? And then the dude says, fuck you talking about,
fuck
man.
You talking about?
Which makes him laugh. And then
the dude.
It ends that. But
always being himself.
At that point, Maude calls and wants him back at her house again.
You haven't gone to the doctor yet?
No.
He's very thorough.
Yeah, he's very thorough. Go to the doctor. And then we see a random
Professor Lupin.
David Thewlis sighting in the weirdest role.
This blew my goddamn mind because I saw him and my brain was like, you know this person.
Yes.
And then I don't know why this is what made me connect the dots, but he that first giggle he does, I'm like, that's fucking David Thewlis.
Professor Lupin.
As I live and breathe.
As I live and breathe. And he's sitting there and he just keeps giggling.
Oh, their band name is Autobahn.
Autobahn.
Yeah. Yep.
Autobahn. Sorry.
Autobahn.
Not Autobahn. Autobahn. Yeah, the German techno band. And his name is Knox Harrington, David Thewlis. He's a video creator or something. The videographer.
Video artiste.
But she says she wants him to go to the doctor again. There might be after effects. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, the guy's giggling the whole time.
I just love at one point there's a wide shot where he starts giggling and then there's just a beat and the dude's like, who the fuck is this? Because yeah. It's very much a...
Yeah, this is one of the few times...
The audience is like very... Is probably in that same mindscape.
Yeah, he's a vehicle for us at that point too. But it's also one of the few times he really starts to kind of like get fed up with the bullshit. Mm-hmm. He makes another white Russian, blah, blah, blah. But... He's also trying to explain to her that he lost the money without being honest about it. There's a lot of ins and outs to all this. It's very complex. But she has a lot of patience for him and his kind of bullshit, which I like.
Well, she kind of wants something else from him.
She wants his seed, perhaps.
Perhaps, maybe. That's why she wants him to go see that doctor.
Somebody who's not her friend, who's not going to be invested in raising the child is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he checks all those boxes. Mm-hmm. But he does go to the doctor, and at one point the doctor says, slide your shorts down, and he's like, no, man, I got hit in my face, and he's like, I know, slide your shorts down, and I just put in quotes, very thorough.
Doesn't Smash get to him driving, and he just got the biggest grin on his face?
He does. He's just smoking a joint, listening to Creedence, his Creedence tapes.
Because that doctor was thorough.
And then he's getting followed by a Volkswagen. He starts looking behind him again. He notices it. At this point, he drops the joint into his lap. We've all been there. Ah! Can't find it. It's burning your thighs in the seat. But then he like pours his beer all over the joint to try to put it out and crashes into a dumpster. The Volkswagen disappears.
Did you notice the continuity error in this?
No. Continuity, schmontinuity.
Yeah. Well, it was obvious for me. I was like, what?
What happened?
Well, he has his glasses are kind of like cockeyed on his face, and he looks down the road. He sees the cut to a shot of the car being gone, cuts back to him. He has no glasses on.
Oh, he took them off while he was looking, man.
Oh, okay.
Come on, man. Easy peasy.
All right. All right.
And I didn't notice. So it worked.
Oh, I paused it. I was like, continuity error.
Fucking editors, man. Can't trust them. I don't know why they're shady now.
But did you know that the blue Volkswagen, you can see it in the background of other scenes?
No. He's been following the whole time kind of
thing.
Yeah,
I know, specifically the diner scene when he and Walter at the diner and Walter's like, I'm going to finish my coffee. Like the blue Volkswagen.
I'm going to finish it.
Yeah, the blue Volkswagen's parked out front.
Enjoying my coffee, but he's clearly not. He's so stubborn. He's just going to sit awkwardly in there. Yes. Great. Sorry to reference that again.
This is a family restaurant, sir.
I was in Nam. People died face down in the muck so you could have the freedom to sit here.
You're entering a world of pain.
What the fuck does Vietnam have to do with this, man? Repeatedly. But yeah, so he crashes and he looks around for the Volkswagen, can't find him. But this is the point where he finds the homework in the seat with all the corrections and fucking Larry. His name at the top. So we cut to, I don't know what this scene is where he's watching this horrible performance
It's his landlord's dance thing.
Oh, it's his landlord.
That was the thing that his landlord was inviting him to earlier in the movie.
He's like, this keeps a roof over my head if I go to shit like this.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah. Walter says
Donnie's in there digging it.
Yeah, Donnie's digging it. I love Walter, like, when we're done with the, and he just kind of like waves his hand.
Gestures at it, yeah. We're going to have it. Things are really finally looking up for us because their whole plan is, you know, his father is Arthur Digby Sellers, the one who wrote the first 150
episodes of Branded.
Yeah. 156, all the best ones. And then shut the fuck. Oh, can we go to In-N-Out? Shut the fuck up, Donnie.
Yeah, because there's an In-N-Out burger nearby.
And then they go to the house. There's a new Corvette parked out front. And he's like, oh, man, he spent all the money. And he's like, oh, no way, dude. He still has got 960 left, easy. And then Sellers is in there in an iron lung. And a good day to you, sir.
Oh, one of my favorite jokes is when, because there's the caretaker. I assume she's the caretaker there who answers the door. He goes, does he still write? It's yeah. just, oh no, he has health problems. It's such a dumb line, but I love it so much.
Severe ones. And Larry comes in, just sits down, stone face stares at him. And we find out later he doesn't have the money or anything, but I guess he did steal the car. So he's just, but he's playing it cool. He's way better than Shauna.
Oh, yeah.
He's not talking.
Yeah, you know, he tight, loose lips sink ships.
He's played in the fifth.
Yeah. F-I-F, the fifth.
And then they go back and forth. At first, Walter's leading the charge, but in the rare, it's the rare moment where Lebowski loses his patience. And there's a moment where Walter says, "You ever heard of Vietnam?" And at the same time, Lebowski says, "We're going to cut your dick off."
Because that's what Uli just said to him like a couple of scenes prior. Yeah.
I didn't even catch that.
"We're going to cut your dick off, Larry."
Yeah, he's just stealing everything everybody says.
And then
you're killing your father.
You're killing your father. And then Walter goes out and like,
"I want to show you what happens when you fuck a stranger in the ass."
And he just goes to town
with a crowbar.
With a crowbar on that car. And which this scene is actually one of the most infamous scenes in regards to hilarious TV edits. Have you heard the TV edit for this scene? Because he's yelling
over and over.
"This is why you don't fuck a stranger in the ass." Well, I have it for you right now, Chris.
Oh, okay.
You ready to listen?
Yes.
Here we go.
"See what happens, Larry? You see what happens when you find a stranger in the Alps? This is what happens. You see what happens, Larry? You see what happens, Larry? This is what happens when you feed a stoner scrambled eggs."
That last one is "feed a stoner scrambled eggs."
What? That's what they came up with?
Well, apparently the Coen brothers thought it was so funny that they had to do this. So they would either like make a PG edit and cut those scenes out, or they would have to redub them, which they did. But they thought it would be funny just to let the actors improv whatever the hell they wanted to do.
So John Goodman said, "When you feed a stoner scrambled eggs."
"This is what happens when you find a stranger in the Alps."
Just like, fuck the whole process. This is dumb. I love it.
But then, but that's not Larry, little Larry's car. That's like a neighbor's car. And so he
I just bought this car.
He grabs the crowbar from Walter and is like, "I'll kill your car." And starts beating up the dude's car.
Hey, man, that's not his car, man.
Oh, man.
I know I keep saying this, but it's got to be top five moments. And the next scene after all this chaos, and the dude is very upset in the driver's seat. And now he has no windows. And Donnie and Walter are eating In-N-Out burgers. So you have to imagine a scenario where they get in the car, they drive off, zero success. And one of them, probably Donnie, goes, "Can we still go to In-N-Out?"
"Can we still get In-N-Out?"
And Walter's like, "Absolutely we can." And the dude,
You're in your element, Donnie.
He's like, "Sure, man." Which I really want right now. I think we have one around here finally.
Do we?
I think so.
Well, we got it.
No, we have a Jack in the Box.
Oh, we've had Jack in the Boxes before.
Yeah, but I've only been there once, so it doesn't count.
Yeah, it's whatever.
No, I don't think we have an In-N-Out.
I want to go to In-N-Out Burger.
You know what we need is a Torchy's. You ever had Torchy's?
No, what is Torchy's?
It's like a taco chain, at least in Texas. I think it's all over out west, but definitely in Texas. Very good, though.
Mm.
Go in and get some three tacos.
I want a Torchy's.
Yeah, we need Torchy's. But I'd rather have an In-N-Out because I've never had it.
Yeah, I've never had it either.
And that looks like a tasty burger.
That is a tasty burger.
And then we see the dude in the next scene, like propping a chair up. He's like nailing a 2x4, telling Walter he doesn't want to work with him anymore. "Fuck you. Yeah, I'll be at practice." And he's like, sets up this elaborate defense from his door getting busted in. And then they pull it the other direction.
The other way, and the chair just falls over.
And it's Jackie Treehorn's people, and say, "Hey, Jackie Treehorn wants to see you." And we know which Lebowski you are this time.
He wants to see the deadbeat Lebowski.
Yeah. And then we see a, what I call a jumpy, naked lady. And to Jackie Treehorn's place. And he introduces himself and they have a conversation. And then this is another person who's living in the past, like looking back toward the days of like Hugh Hefner and like the peak of classy pornography or whatever in his mind. And the dude says, "I still jerk off manually."
Yeah, because he's talking about like it's all going to be electronic in the future.
And I got another white Russian that's important in this scene. I love how they spoof. It's just like Naked Gun level out of nowhere, I feel like. I mean, it's pretty silly.
Oh, the note?
Yeah. You know what I mean? This is like some straight Naked Gun shit.
Oh, yeah, it is. The guy 100%.
Gets a sneaky phone call, writes, jots on a piece of paper and leaves. And then Big Lebowski's like a detective finally, like, does the whole trace thing. And it's just a guy with a huge cock that he just drew and ripped off and left with. He's like, oh, man.
It's pretty accurate.
So then he presents him with the same deal that Maud Lebowski gave him. I'll give you 10% of the take if you find the money for me, blah, blah, blah. He agrees to it. I already know where it is. You just got to go to Larry Sellers' house, man. It should be easy with your guys. He's only 15. And he's really confident with his second white Russian while he says this, but he's been drugged.
He's been drugged.
Ooh, it's a strong Caucasian you made here, Jackie, which is a nickname for the white Russian. And he passes out and then he wakes up running in the street after a bonkers David Lynch style sequence.
Mm-hmm. Jackie Treehorn presents Gutterballs.
It's like a porno with him and Maude.
Saddam Hussein is giving him his bowling shoes.
Yeah, Saddam Hussein presents him the shoes, again, dating it in that 90s era.
Mm-hmm. Maude's wearing like a Viking outfit. And I do like the headdress that a lot of the extras are wearing that look like a bunch of pins, and they're using it to kind of fan.
Yeah.
They use it to great effect. And
he's in a like repairman outfit because of the porn reference, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because he's there to fix the cable.
I'm an expert.
But after the dream sequence, he wakes up in the street running down the road and there's a cop car behind him. And we find out that Jackie Treehorn actually called the cops on him. So they were just keeping him distracted so they could toss his apartment. But when the cop arrests him, we go back to the station. But in the car, he starts singing that song like I forget what the lyrics, but it was at first relevant to what he was doing. You know what I mean? It was like, being an outlaw, you know, a criminal against a man, branded. And, you know, and he's like, branded. Screams that part all drunk. It's super funny to me. But at the station, a Ralph's card is his only ID. We don't have any Ralph's around here, but I think it's like a Costco or a supermarket of some
like
kind.
Kroger, yeah.
And Jackie Treehorn, he treats objects like women, man. But then the cop hits him in the...
I don't like your jerk-off robe. I don't like your jerk-off face.
I don't like your jerk-off name. And I don't like you, jerk-off.
Stay out of Malibu, Lebowski.
You hearing me? Sorry, man. I wasn't listening.
Oh, you fascist.
Hits him in the head with a coffee cup. And you fascist? And then he's in a cab headed home. And this is when he tells the cab driver, please turn that off. I had a horrible day and I hate the fucking Eagles, man. So he throws him out of his cab. And then we get an interesting scene, like to ramp up the stakes for the mystery. Is like we see Bunny drive by, listening to the worst song ever written, "Viva Las Vegas."
That's the worst song ever written.
I hate that song with a passion. Do you love it? Are you a fan?
I don't really. You're ambivalent. Care. Yeah, I'm ambivalent towards it.
I don't like that song.
The funny story about the Eagles joke, because it's a funny joke. Like, I just hate the Eagles, and the cabbie goes off on.
Yeah.
Apparently. I don't have the names in front of me, but they were trying to secure the rights to a Rolling Stones song. I think it plays at the end of the movie, maybe. But the Stones didn't own the rights to the song. Like this other guy, like Rick something, owned it at the time because he's like an asshole who kind of like swindled the rights of the song away from the Stones. And so they're trying to get the rights to the song. And that guy was like, I'll charge you $150,000 to use this song. And they're like, all right, cool, I guess. Well, they showed the guy a screening of the movie, and when they got to that line, I was like, I really hate the fucking Eagles, man. I guess that guy also hates the Eagles and thought the line was so funny that then he gave them the rights to the song for free.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
So apparently there's like a deep-rooted hatred. Like, you have to hate the Eagles a lot if you're like, I don't need $150,000 if you're spreading the good word.
Yeah, that's crazy. Must have had plenty of money, though, at the time, right?
Yeah.
Well, we see that Bunny's not missing a toe. It pans across her toes. Quentin Tarantino's favorite scene in this movie.
Oh, man. He loved it so much.
I love that I glossed over it for time's sake, but there's a hilarious... Walter is so confident. Like, well, that doesn't prove anything. You want a toe? I can get you a toe. I can get you a toe by 3 o'clock with nail polish on it.
God, Walter.
But he comes back home. His apartment's been tossed, and Maude is there while he's laying on the floor. She steps over him. Want a bone?
Love me.
Yeah, it was way more accurate than what I said. Wanna bone?
Hey, sailor, wanna bone?
But then there's he's smoking.
Give me your Jimmy Stewart and we'll make whoopee.
He's smoking another roach post-coitus, and she asked about his past, and he says he was the guy that wrote the Port Huron Statement. Do you happen to know what that is?
I meant to look it up, but I did not. I also meant to look it up and did not.
The
Port Huron Statement is a 1962 political manifesto of the American Student Activist Movement, Students for a Democratic Party, SDS.
See, I knew it was going to be some hippie shit because that's what he's about. And then he's also one of the Seattle Seven, of course. He is the Seattle Seven and six other guys.
He's also a roadie for Metallica.
And I forgot about this part. So in the while he was talking in the back, I was terrible people. When he was talking in the back, I saw her doing that stuff where she's like rocking back and forth with her knees to her chest. And I was like, is she doing the get me pregnant move? Because I remember those days. Mm-hmm. And she totally is. She's trying to have his seed. And it makes him do a spit take on his white Russian.
Yeah, that's what the doctor was for. She was making sure he had the
hence
stuff.
The doctor. Or no ailments you need to worry about, things like that as well. So you think he came, he ejaculated at the doctor, is why he was happy?
I think that's implied that he got some type of sample.
Okay.
Yeah. Because he makes him drop his pants, and then the next scene is him just like having a great old time.
And we find out Big Lebowski is actually broke. He's a complete fraud in this scene as well. She gives him an allowance. The daughter, Maud Lebowski, actually runs the estate. We let him run a few companies before. He's terrible at it, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, he bankrupted them.
And that's when it all hits Lebowski, our Lebowski, the dude that it was all a ruse. He thought that Bunny was kidnapped and he wanted her to die. And so he wanted to pin it all on the dude and just keep the $1 million. So it was never any money in that briefcase. He was going to say it was used for ransom, but he just withdrew it to keep it because he's actually broke. Aha! It all hits him. So he calls Walter, like, I've gotten an emergency, but it's, of course, Erev Shabbos now. Again, I don't know what any of this means. I don't know much about Judaism other than it's a day that he's not supposed to be working or answering the phone. And Walter's really upset. Like, this has to be a matter of life or death, man. I get what you're saying. But outside, before any of that.
If you don't pick me up, I'm off the bowling team.
That's his threat.
Yeah.
He sees the Volkswagen there again, and he gets really upset. But it turns out it's just a brother, Seamus. Mm-hmm. It's DeFino, a fellow dick. He thinks he's a private investigator as well. He works for the Knutsons, Bunny's parents, who hired him back in like Wisconsin or something. Mm-hmm. Show her a picture of the farm if you find her. That way you can send her back home. And he says, how are you going to keep them on the farm when they've seen Carl Hungus?
Yep. So that town that she's from is actually the sister town to Fargo.
Oh, nice.
Because they were kind of trying to imply that this is like the same universe as Fargo.
They pulled out the old scout photos.
Yeah.
And just used one of those. That's mm-hmm. cool. And then we see briefly the Germans, the nihilists at the pancake house. And the lady that they're with is missing a toe is what the whole point of that scene is for. But it's also funny because you get to see Flea order pancakes.
And Peter Stormare also finally got to get some pancakes.
Lingonberry.
Because in Fargo, his character is like, let's go to pancakes house.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's genius.
Which, by the way, I don't know if we've said this yet. I love Peter Stormare.
I haven't said that specific. I love Fargo with a fucking cold. That's probably my favorite Coen Brothers movie.
I need to rewatch Fargo. It's been years, but like I love Peter Stormare so much. Like he pops up in things, he's always one of those character actors you never forget.
Yeah.
He's got
a face.
He's got a face, but also all of his characters are just off enough to be slightly off-putting, but endearing at the same time.
Yeah.
Like he can be a weirdo when he wants to be, but like most of the time it's like he's the Russian guy from Armageddon. You know?
Yes. And it is easier to train, you know, engineers and stuff that can go to drillers that can go to space.
I mean, that's the science, Chris.
Than astronauts to drill.
Yeah.
Everybody knows this.
Right. Right.
God, I'm ready to watch that movie again too.
That's a good one.
And then that's when he's telling Walter it's a ringer for a ringer, right? And as they pull up to the Big Lebowski's mansion, they see that her car is crashed into the fountain, still playing Viva Las Vegas. Thank God for
me. She had that on a loop.
Yeah. Implying, she was just listening to that for like 8 hours. She went down to Florida or something, we find out, but she just went on an impromptu vacation. She was fine the whole time.
Brant's like picking up her stuff. We're so happy she's back.
Yeah. Don't go in there. He's very upset. And this is where the dude steals another line, but this time it's the line that he steals. where's the fucking money, Lebowski? The thing that everybody's been saying to him the whole movie. And then Walter's there with him now, and he's very, we know how Walter is. And so he says that he's a fake paraplegic. This guy walks. I've never been more sure of anything in my life. And of course he's a real paraplegic. It's very sad. Yeah. And Walter's like, the dude's like, help me put him back in his chair, man.
It ends on such a downer moment. It should be a victorious moment for the two of them.
Yeah.
But Walter always takes things way too far.
Well, this is a downer. And then another downer, in the next scene.
Well, this scene features one of the only improvised lines in the whole movie. Do you know which one it is?
You mean the scene where they confront the Big Lebowski?
Yeah.
No.
You human paraquat.
What even is that?
A paraquat
is a mix of a kumquat and a parakeet?
It's a herbicide.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's kind of like if you're that's a good thing to call a capitalistic dude.
Yeah,
right? Because he's
like
ruining nature kills, with his
things, yeah.
Yeah. You human paraquat.
Donnie, in the next scene, we see Jesus again, back on his bullshit, upset that they skipped the Sabbath. What is this Sabbath shit? You're trying to mind fuck me? I would have fuck you in the ass on Saturday. I'll fuck you in the ass on Wednesday. but Donnie is the first time we see him bowl and not get a strike.
He got a 9, yeah.
He's very upset and weirded out by that. You see him kind of looking at his arm and flexing it, an indication of a heart attack coming soon. His arm feels weird. Mm-hmm. And outside, the nihilists are out there setting his car on fire, his poor car. I wonder if this is where they got the idea for Dude, Where's My Car, too, by the way. Because outside, he's like, where's your car, dude?
Dude, where's your car?
Yeah.
Earlier. What's my tattoo say, dude? Dude.
What's mine say?
Nice.
What does it say?
Dude.
Jesus, Steve. Why did you put that back in my brain?
The best joke in that movie.
It is.
It's that.
It is. But then, yeah, the nihilists are outside and they just say, well, then just give us all the money you have, because they find out. Like, hey, man, the jig's up. You don't have the girl. But my girlfriend cut off toe. Yeah,
my girlfriend cut off toe.
She thought she was going to get $1 million. And at this scene, like, Walter basically kills Flea, I think. I mean, he throws the bowling ball so hard into his chest cavity. He's not going to do well.
No.
And then he bites the fucking ear off Peter Stormare.
Yep. I love the whole time, like, the dude's like, just take the $4 fucking,
yeah, trying
man.
To fight him. But then back in there, Donnie's been having a heart attack. And I saw somebody compare this scene to the Western, like a big shootout at the end. But instead of a shootout, it's just Donnie having a heart attack. But like the best friend always dies in the big Westerns. And it's always a revenge story in an American Western. But instead of like killing my wife or stealing my horse, it's that somebody pissed on his rug is how the whole thing starts off. And it's really neat, all the Western parallels in this movie. But Donnie's death is one of those. Donnie dies. The next scene, they're in the mortuary. They don't want to pay for the urn, so they go to a Ralph's to get a coffee can.
$180 for the receptacle. It's our most economically priced receptacle.
It's our most modestly priced receptacle.
Priced, yeah.
They go up to $3,000. We're just going to scatter them. And then they take him to the Pacific Ocean to scatter his ashes. And Walter gives this ridiculous speech and brings up Vietnam a bunch again, pisses the dude off. And then it's like there's this big gust of
Folgers can.
There's this big gust of wind. And then he just starts like slinging it instead of pouring it over the cliff. And it's just covering the dude in Donnie's ashes. And he's just taking it like, of course he is. And he gets fed up with Walter. You ruin everything, man. But they go back to the bowling alley.
Sorry, dude. I'm sorry.
What is this, the fifth, sixth time they're at the bowling alley?
In the original script, it was in this scene, it would be revealed that Walter was never in Vietnam.
Oh, really?
That he was faking it the whole time. Yeah. Because, like,
you get that vibe.
Yeah. Because in the script, Balky would be like, Walter, what your fuck? What was not? You weren't even there, man. Like, that was
going to be the line.
They cut. That was the only way they were going to, only thing they were going to do, but they just removed that one line. But yeah. So yeah, you can take from that Walter was never actually in Vietnam and believe that. I'd believe it if someone told me that.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think it's like somebody would just fake PTSD, though. That's weird. I mean, he's very ineffectual at everything else he does. It makes sense.
And also, he's He definitely adopts things that other from other people and makes them his own life, to the point where his ex-wife was Jewish, and that's why he's now devoutly Jewish, is because he was just trying to, he took something else from somebody else.
And this movie has a lot to say about identity and how it's kind of nebulous. Mm-hmm. People crave to lean on things, ideologies. But we see the stranger at the bar again, and this is either, you either hate this or think it's one of the best endings to any movie ever. And this is where we get another speech with the stranger, and where we get the dude abides line. And he says, well, it just about wraps it up. I take comfort in that, knowing there's a man like him out there taking it easy for all us sinners. Yeah. And Maude's pregnant too. I happen to be privy to a little child dude out there, something like that.
A little dude is on his way. And I take comfort in that. Didn't like seeing Donnie go.
Didn't like seeing Donnie go.
Well, lost my train of thought.
Yeah, perfect ending there. And that's it. I mean, ultimately nothing changes. He still has no job. He's at the bowling alley just taking it easy. But that's kind of the comfort he says in somebody like the dude.
So two things about this scene that kind of blew my mind. The first is the classic, the dude abides, right? That's like Lebowski's like most iconic, arguably, line. It's like, the dude abides. And I just love how, you know, I think you might have brought it up before, but it's just like the way that he got that word from the Big Lebowski, like, I will not abide a missing toe.
Yeah.
And then the dude abides, but they're using abides on they're technically using it correctly, but the two different definitions in a way that fits those characters. And I think that's so genius.
Yeah.
And then that whole take with him, that last take with him leaving, the dude abides, Sam Elliott talking, is all one take. And then the camera kind of pushes forward past the bar, and this one guy walks in the frame and bowls a strike. And all I could think of was like, what if that guy missed? How long did they have Sam Elliott at that table redoing that take if he would just like not do a strike each time?
Yeah.
That's all I could think about.
Maybe they shot it in reverse. Hurry up, stand the pins up.
There's actually a smash cut in there, like hidden somewhere that we don't know about.
Yeah, you just gutter ball it every time. Mm-hmm. I mean, they might have paid a pro bowler just to be an extra or something.
I would be the guy who, like, I could probably be a pro bowler. I can score a perfect game, no doubt. But you put me in that high-stakes situation.
With like Sam Elliott, of all people.
Here I come. Gutter.
But anyway, the dude abides.
The dude abides.
Valerie, thank you so much. I would not have rewatched this movie for quite some time, I don't think, without you.
Mm-hmm. Same.
And I had a great time. I've loved it more. I loved it more than I ever have before. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to that. You can become a patron at patreon.com/streamingthings if you want to force us to watch movies like this. And look forward soon to, we got cool things on the horizon. Probably going to be starting a Lost Season 1 watch simultaneously. Steve, you're going to be launching a Star Trek Strange New Worlds episode every Thursday, probably every Friday.
Well, yeah. So Strange New Worlds Season 2 drops on the 15th of June.
Yeah. So mid-June.
Phil will be on the show. He's my best friend. I've talked about him a lot on this podcast.
Some of you may have heard Phil.
Some of you, if you watch the After Hours with Phil on the Patreon, you've heard Phil. We will be doing a Star Trek podcast. Those will be releasing Friday after they air.
But we're going to continue doing these Patreon movies. Mm. We're going to start doing Crossing Streams and talk about everything that's airing on television at once. I think Madison's going to continue to be with us. So cross your fingers for that. I think she's more than willing, I'm pretty sure.
And if you want even more Streaming Things content, I will be on a YouTube channel show called It Crept from the 80s. So look for that channel. The channel with me, the interview with me on it will be dropping on Wednesday. So same day as you're listening to this. You could probably go on there and check it out. I will be sharing the link in the socials and all that. If you're interested, it's basically just me talking about how Streaming Things came to be. I talk very not kindly about Chris, Andy, and Madison. And also we share some Alien, because the host, Chris, his name is also Chris.
Perfect.
Which I know you would love.
Synchronicity.
He also has an Alien fear, as I do. So we talk about that quite a lot. And his story is way more terrifying than mine. So
it wasn't just a sleep paralysis thing?
No, it was like one of two things happened. Either A, there was a little gray in his backyard, or just a weird fucking dude just hanging out in his backyard.
You're out of your element, Donnie.
Donnie, you're out of your element. You're about to enter a world of pain.
You're about to enter a world. I'm going to be quoting this movie like an above average amount this week.
Oh, 100%.
Because it's like those quotes fit in so many different situations. Mm-hmm. You can just say that kind of shit.
You're not wrong. You're just an asshole.
You could be a... yeah. Or you can just say, am I wrong?
Am I wrong?
Am I the only one around here?
Oh, it's so good.
I'm going to say that at Chick-fil-A. It cares about the fucking rules. Did I tell you I got... Oh, we'll end it on this. Did I tell you about what I did there? I finally... Like my bucket list thing I did at Chick-fil-A?
No.
How have I never shared this?
I don't know. What was your bucket list at Chick-fil-A?
Well, listeners in America, you might know when you go to Chick-fil-A and you say thank you, they are mandated.
My pleasure.
They are mandated. They have to say my pleasure. It's like part of the training, I guess, right?
People think I often used to work there because I...
You say my pleasure.
I say my pleasure, but that was because the hotel I worked at did a similar thing where we had to say my pleasure.
Pleasure. I've just been pleasured at Chick-fil-A. Mm. So I've always wanted to get a Chick-fil-A employee to say thank you so that I could say my pleasure.
Oh, my God.
And they never will. No matter how polite you are, they will not fucking say thank you. It's like
they probably know.
Because they know,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But I got them, Steve.
You got them?
I roll up to the drive-thru. I order everything. I get to the window. And you know how they're like an efficient machine, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a young lady sitting outside the window whose job it is to hand everything off through the window. She's standing there. And I was like, I fucking got it. And she's wearing these giant, expensive-looking mirror Ray-Ban sunglasses. So I go, skirt. I pull up. My son's in the back seat. He's ready because he knows I've been planning this for months. And I was like, oh, my God. I love your glasses. And I had my painted nails and shit, too. And so she turned around and she goes, oh, thank you. And I just went, my pleasure. And I swear to God, I wish I was filming it because my son loses it. But at the same time, the girl just goes, oh. Like I got her. You know what I mean? Like she had physical reaction.
You got me.
And then the biggest smile I've ever seen. Like I think you know what I mean? Like it was just a moment. It was a thing. Mm. And it made me feel so good. I just drove off. I didn't even get my food. I was so happy. I did. I waited. But
you drove home and Mason's like, that was really funny, Dad, but
I'm hungry.
Where are my nuggets?
But my son was so happy. I was giddy. I was on the phone with my wife. She was unimpressed. She was like, nice. I was like, you don't understand. I've been trying this for months. So that's how you do it, folks. You compliment something on their person.
I love a good fast food bucket list.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Like, you remember when all the kids were just grabbing the ice cream off the cones and stuff? That mm-hmm. was the whole thing.
Yeah.
I wanted to be a part of that, but I feel like I missed the boat.
I still want to go to a White Castle with an E.T. mask and pretend to be Stone Cold E.T.
Stone Cold E.T.
Stone Cold E.T. wants a cup of cheeseburgers so he can whip Vince McMahon's ass.
Did we ever show Madison that clip?
Yeah, we did.
We did? Okay, yeah. I just want to make sure.
Dead ass, we did.
It's very important to me. Hello? All right, that's all the time we have for right now. My name is Chris.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things.
It's gonna be May. And in this month of May, we want to give a special shout out to the patrons that are brand new to the Stream Fiends family. This first person isn't brand new, but they have upgraded their tier to the highest possible tier. And that is the K-Stew patron saint of Streaming Things. And that is none other than Will Nash. Thank you, Will, for your patronage. In the Try Before You Deny producers tier, we want to welcome Alan Tomlinson. Hello, Alan. Thanks for joining. In the Marty B VIP producers tier, we want to thank Christian Louise, Kate Russell, Gabriella Balin, and Rachel B. Thank you all so much for being in the Nina with Dr. Marty B. In the Chocolate Pudding producer section, we want to welcome Alyssa Haley, Karis Brister, Echo Echo Romeo Oscar, Jason Richards, Harry and Charmaine, Chelsea Agunde, Nomad Props, David Gauthier, probably mispronouncing all of these, Christian Pancow, Kelly Camp, Nathan Fisher, Izzy Drawing Wolf, and Mary Phillips. Thank you all for joining the Chocolate Pudding tier. Hope you enjoy this bonus episodes. And in the Friends Don't Lie producer section, we want to thank Serena Singh, K.L. Morton, Tony T. Is that Tony time? We'll never know. Oren Ronan and Mike Oxlong. Thank you all so much for keeping the lights on over here at Streaming Things. We love you so much dearly, and we appreciate your patronage so much in this month of May.
The biggest names in tennis are coming to Paris for the most anticipated Roland Garros in years. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled tournament access as the world's top players in tennis face off against each other. Will the veteran champions continue their dominance, or will a fresh face emerge to challenge their legacy on the clay courts? Daily live coverage of this epic showdown begins Monday, May 20th. Don't miss a matchup. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.